Welcome to Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs, the podcast for busy and high-performing entrepreneurs and leaders who are looking to create more energy and optimize their health while upgrading their brain and personal performance with precision. I am your host, Julian Hayes II. I've been involved with health and performance for over a decade. This podcast was created for the high performer who is unapologetically ambitious, the one who moves at a fast pace and operates with an edge, the one who wants to become superhuman. Nothing here is fluff, gimmicky, or feel good. I have little to no interest in simply helping you improve your life. I want to help transform it. By listening to this podcast, expect to have a body that feels just as good as it looks. Expect to possess a swagger and style that gives off an infectious vibe. Expect to command the stage or any boardroom you walk into with your executive presence. And lastly, expect to become your most enhanced self so you can live a limitless life. Now, let's get to the show. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Julian Hayes II, and today I have a very special guest with me, and I know I say that every time I talk to someone, and that's because they are special. And so her name is Molly McLaughlin. She is the creator of Sleep is a Skill, which is a company that optimizes how people sleep through a unique blend of technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Molly, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I am doing great. I loved that we got to speak beforehand and we both got our walk out in the sun, get a little activity as much as possible during, you know, these kind of surreal times that we're going through right now. So, you know, grateful to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, let's start with talking about the elephant in the room. You know, this is on everyone's mind right now. So has quarantine life changed a lot of your day-to-day, the way that you would go about things?
So for me, since I have this company, Sleep is a Skill, it's an online training company. So I do have a lot of calls and virtual activity anyway. So for me, my day-to-day work life hasn't shifted too much. So that I'm really grateful for. And I still have, you know, certainly you, as we're interconnected people, then being interconnected to the experience and emotional turbulence and turmoil for other people around us is palpable, and just the uncertainty for all of us of how life will look in the future. You know, those things certainly factor in, and certainly my clients have had a huge uptick in. Not huge, and I shouldn't make it a blanket statement because it doesn't apply to all clients, but there certainly has been an uptick in a number of people with a rise in anxiety. And of course, we can measure that through some of the sleep tech that I have people wearing. So we'll see, you know, heart rate increase, HRV, heart rate variability, often tank, and, you know, body temperature might go up for certain people around certain periods of time, dealing with kind of the stress and inflammation and some of the behavioral change patterns that they'll start partaking in, which can start skewing things for them. And the impact being that their sleep can be negatively affected.
So during this time, I'm curious, how has coaching clients been different for you? What's been some of the biggest adjustments that you've had to make? Because I'm sure, you know, like you mentioned, there's extra stress. You know, I'm sure some clients are worried about their careers. Some of them are home with their families more now. You know, that can be good and bad. Sometimes you can get tired of each other. So I'm curious, what are some of the biggest adjustments that you've had to make?
Great question. Yeah. So the average client that I'm working with often, I do have people that are either women going through menopause or postmenopause and having difficulties with their sleep as it relates to that. And so depending on the age range, as I do have then some women later in life and also men that are getting concerned because now they might be falling closer to the at-risk population for the virus. And, you know, so of course that's a wide spectrum. So, but when we are dealing with people, you know, getting closer to the retirement age, then that has been concerning for them because now they're starting to really question what's next for them. What will life look like now if they do fall into more of these at-risk categories, and how can they adjust accordingly? And so from that place, when there is that lack of certainty or safety, then one of the things that often falls, you know, gets impacted is their sleep, the quality of their sleep, the timing of their sleep. So we have to do really a lot of extra work to amp up, you know, some of the fundamentals to ensure that we can you know, kind of ride out this period together in a way that's going to help them prevent really kind of going real off course, which is what I'm seeing when people then come to me, you know, because we've had a whole slew of added traffic now because people are kind of at their wits' end around their sleep and concerned about what that's doing to their health and immune system. So then they're ready to make a difference for that. So I'm having a lot of new clients that are have just been, you know, for one thing, used to maybe have some of the consistent sleep patterns, maybe externally from their jobs, you know, proper kind of quote unquote 9 to 5. And then when that's not there, now they're stressed. Now they don't have those parameters by which external parameters to kind of manage their sleep. Now they're anxious, and now they're self-regulating and unfortunately not having a lot of success with it often, and going to bed really late, waking up late, or variable times. And then what happens is a fallout of more and more wake-ups. And then the things that are, it's kind of that snowball effect. Because once we begin there, then often we'll see what gets cut is the consistency of the workouts. And there's so many things that people could argue, you know, rightfully so, that it's much more challenging. The gyms are closed, you know, maybe access to certain types of foods are not there in the same way. You know, there's all that, that you could point to that would say, yes, this has to go this way. And, but if we put our heads together, then we can start bringing things to course correct, to bring things back to more of a, at least beginning at homeostasis, and then putting in the training work to then get to exceptional levels of sleep and kind of optimizing their sleep.
So have you had to make any changes to your typical behaviors in terms of getting optimal sleep every night since this? Has it been impacted?
Oh yeah, good question. So for me, I mean, one of the things that I argue can be really a blessing if you can take it as that way, you know, maybe none of us would choose to have certainly, you know, coronavirus coming with all the things we're dealing with. And one of the happy fallouts of that is that you were suddenly, we have this blank canvas by which we can now paint what we call sleep as a skill or circadian crafted day. And you're not then, it can be a good kind of sandbox to practice these healthy habits without the impact of some of the standard things that we would, you know, be involved with. So some of the social obligations and maybe going out to later dinners, drinking, you know, variable set schedules, because suddenly now 7 days a week, for many, not all, but for a lot of us that are in lockdown, then we can have more of a consistent schedule than ever if we so choose to set it up that way. So for me, I am so addicted to feeling good now because, you know, part of my story is that for so long I was one of the people that you would be like, oh God, you should probably talk to someone about your sleep. and that's how life was for me for a long time. And I would go to bed as the sun was rising, and didn't think there was much of a problem with that until I went through my own period of insomnia. And it was just really, really challenging. It was actually while I was traveling on the road, and it became this clear, like, draw a line in the sand moment in my life where I knew in order to shift this, I was going to need to really change everything in a lot of ways, that I had to really start shifting what I prioritized and what was important to me. And, you know, kind of the burning the candle at both ends as an entrepreneur wasn't working. And so it ended up being one of the best things that could have happened to me. But, you know, I didn't realize it at the time. But certainly once I went through that, then I'm so grateful for it, because then I got to see what life looked like truly with virtually no sleep, and it was just not workable. And now to know not only what sleep, what life looks like with sleep, but also with optimal levels of sleep and a knowingness of what to put in, what to take out, if it is at all off course. And it, for me, is just a wonderful sense of empowerment around this area that I'd never had before. So for me, I've become so accustomed to really waking up and feeling great, which I never used to feel. So I do a lot to ensure that I maintain that. So that looks like, you know, largely 7 days a week, which is akin to how in our hunter-gatherer days, we most likely would have conducted ourselves, that we would have really pretty consistent sleep schedules, more in alignment with the rhythms of nature. Meaning like sunrise and sunset, just because that's a big marker for circadian rhythm, not like in a woo-woo way, like in a scientific way, that that is one of the big elements to having a robust and strong circadian rhythm. So having the relationship to that for me has been really, really helpful. And in addition to that, then it's doing all these those other things that can make a difference. So like meal timing, practicing circadian rhythm, intermittent fasting. So continuing to do that, which looks like really your last meal is you're aiming to have that always within sunrise and sunset. And for me, I actually stop eating in the afternoon every day, you know, often around like 2 or 3 p.m., doesn't mean that everyone has to do that, but I'm saying the goal is to have it within sunrise and sunset largely, and the impact that that can make on your sleep, as well as I virtually never drink anymore, which I used to. I mean, I'm born on St. Patrick's Day, I'm Molly McLaughlin. Like, I really used to have a lot of link ups with alcohol and socializing, and yet as I began to really get the impact of that on my sleep and nighttime eating and, you know, certain timing of exercises, light optimization, darkness, all the things that can impact your sleep, then, I've really dialed those in. But, you know, there's always those things that do get impacted. So, to further answer your question, I definitely had my slip ups, particularly in the beginning of all this, where I would make the very relatable mistake of, oh, let me just check one more thing of, you know, what's trending on this corona situation. This is in the beginning when we were first beginning to get locked down, and it's, you know, kind of the reality is sinking in. And, you know, I would check and then go down a rabbit hole of, oh no, what is, and now this other, you know, industry is affected and this is affected. And, you know, so, and then that out of that, your brain is so overacted, you know, in this state of hyper arousal. And then that's certainly challenging for sleep. So having to then, institute those strong kind of bookends to your day. So, you know, not really starting your day with the news and not ending your day with news, and setting the parameters up to make that sustainable. And, you know, there's a number of things that you can do to make a difference in that area.
So I'm curious about the, I too as well, give myself a few hours between my last meal and going to bed, 2 p.m. So I'm curious, what's your eating window?
So it's fairly, it's almost just like a reverse, 16, 8, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, not a 16, 8, well, it's almost, you know, if you upside down, if you flip the mm-hmm. traditional intermittent fasting, variables where, oh, just skip breakfast. Mm-hmm. And that's what many people do nowadays. And it, you know, it, you look to autophagy and understanding, and then all the benefits of intermittent fasting make a lot of sense. However, unfortunately, that one can be a bit problematic for sleep, for circadian rhythm optimization, because then you're backloading and putting the majority of your meal timing in later hours of the day. So really, this is just flipping it. And so I'll start eating, usually wake up around where we are in Vegas right now. We're digital nomads, so we happen to be settled in Vegas to get optimal sunlight during the pandemic. And so while we're here right now, we're at around a 6 a.m. wake up. So we'll eat breakfast shortly thereafter and then stop around 2. So it's still a fairly lengthy window, and yet it can measurably shift the my HRV readouts and quality of my sleep. And not to say that everyone has to do that, but certainly one of the gamifications that you could test out is playing with the ending of your meal timing, maybe going more towards like the early bird special type timing and seeing what that ends up doing for your sleep. But of course, this is variable depending on what time people go to bed. But the part of the reason for all this is then that can help aid in something that's a bit newer for our for the mass audience that has been understood, which is something known as glymphatic drainage. And glymphatic drainage, you know, most of us have heard of lymphatic drainage, but glymphatic drainage looks at the cleaning up system of the brain at night, specifically in slow wave sleep. And so one of the things that can help make a difference with achieving some of that slow wave sleep can be related to the meal timing. So if your body is not having to engage in digestion while you're sleeping, then it can actually focus on that glymphatic drainage, which comes first, tends to come first in the night during the first stage of our sleep, because traditional sleep architecture has us go through cycle more heavily on slow wave first and then later cycling into more REM sleep. So if you've just eaten a ton before you fall asleep, which is what I totally used to do, then unfortunately, then your body's having to send all that blood flow, all that work is having to be done during the digestive process, and then it's being splintered from the processes of cleaning out basically toxins that have accumulated in your brain throughout the day. And part of the impact of that is it's looking like some pretty strong correlations between what we see in late stage Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, dementia, which is a buildup of this plaque substance, this amyloid beta. And if you have a lot of this amyloid beta, you can see similarities between sleep deprived brains and, you know, some of those neurodegenerative diseases. And unfortunately, if you are having that, then you can really have those symptoms of what feel like, you know, just slow brain fog. You know, it can really become problematic if it's persistent. So by playing with that meal timing, that can be one element to helping to ensure that you're getting ample glymphatic drainage each night.
Yeah, and you mentioned with the meal timing, one reason why I bumped my endpoint for eating a few hours before bed even more is because I noticed that my HRV dramatically improved.
Yes,
at that time. And then also I didn't have as many of those micro awakenings. And so basically a lot of times we think we're getting quality sleep, but we're waking up a lot throughout the night and we don't even notice it.
And absolutely.
So I'm curious, you know, because a lot of times one of the reasons I love HRV, besides the science aspect of it and all that it indicates, is that it gives you something to track and educate your clients with. Because a lot of times clients, I have to explain to them that there's a difference between being good and being optimal. So sure, we can get by with 6 hours of sleep because our brain will naturally get used to this, but it doesn't mean we're in an optimal state. So what are some things that you typically do to kind of get your clients to try those things, such as eating earlier and just an assortment of other tools to improve their sleep? I guess, how do you get their buy-in?
Yeah. So HRV, I love how you kind of described HRV because it's so true. It's such a fascinating metric. And you know, again, for people that maybe aren't as familiar with HRV, it's heart rate variability, and it relates to it's the closest understanding that we have, the closest biometric that we can point to that can give us a understanding of how our autonomic nervous system is functioning. So it can give us a nice glimpse into both how our stress gets manifested, so you know, psychological stress, and then also a ton of other physiological stressors. So you know, down to the types of foods that we're eating. You know, having some dairy might affect your HRV. Having you know, certain things might flare it up that we might not consider, and then environmental stress. So some of the air quality that we're around, you know, some of the environmental stressors as it relates to even a lack of something. So for sleep, we do a lot of work with light and dark optimization and really kind of getting your light right. And with that, if you are someone that's you know, partaking in what many people are, particularly during the lockdown, is indoor living. Even before the lockdown, some of the stats were supposedly in around over 90% of most people's days are spent inside. So we're much more akin to like zoo animals than our hunter-gatherer ancestors. So if that's the case, then we're being deprived of things like sunlight and fresh air much more than ever before. So we're breathing in recycled air from the inside. We're not getting that full spectrum light, which is really meant to, one, of course, aid in vitamin D production, which is getting a lot of press right now in the media as it relates to immune function. But it actually does play a huge role in our sleep because it's part of this whole cocktail of then allowing us to build enough serotonin, and which leads to melatonin. And it's this interconnectivity that many of us might not have considered. So things like getting enough of that morning, particularly morning sunlight, because that's kind of your sun anchoring system that then helps you set your kind of master clock, which is the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And that will help orient your body as to what time zone you're on, because it is a dynamic process. If you've traveled at all, you know, you can, over the course of a couple weeks, totally transition to an entirely different time zone. And it's really by behavior and by environmental cues like light and dark cycles. So we're kind of wanting to ensure that we're doing the same thing, even if we don't leave our zip code, and ensure that we're having reliable timing of both the lighting and then as well as our meal timing, because then that can lead to, if it's all over the place, it can lead to what's known as metabolic jet lag. So it's self-created. And then, of course, we can have self-created what they call social jet lag when we are also all over the place with our sleep times. And so those things all really largely connect to HRV. And then another thing that you can't even have a conversation without HRV without being connected to the diaphragm, because it's plays such a huge role in that. So there are even, you know, because a lot of my clients, depends on the client, but I do have a lot of like more biohackery friendly people that are really into the quantified approach. So they might engage in some of the different breathing gadgets that you can get. So there's a pretty affordable one called Breather Fit that you can work through, and it has a accompanying app, and then you can kind of build up your respiratory, so it's a respiratory trainer essentially. And then you can kind of go up the dials on getting stronger with that muscle. And so that can be measurable as far as your HRV readouts. And then things, you know, more that can like land is more like a light, like, oh, wouldn't that be nice? Like, oh, sure, like meditate or what have you. But then when you have something like the feedback of HRV, then it really can help put the power of something like that, that kind of proverbial reset to the brain than to have that time, not even just the brain, but also the breath, then those two things can make a big difference with the readouts of your HRV. So those are some things that you can do. Also, I mean, HRV is so interesting and it's affected by so many things, including, I mean, we're talking just the amount of water you're having and the type of water. And, you know, just if you really get in the weeds with it, it can be so, so interesting.
Yeah. You know, a very interesting thing with HRV is like, with clients, you can, I have all this data over a month and I can see there's certain times where there's like a spike. And what they correlated with is that there's certain tasks that they do within their business that causes a lot of stress and they weren't even aware of it.
Yes.
And another thing, when I was doing a little prepping for you and everything, I saw also you associating HRV with dating and one of your clients. So I would love to hear, I would love to hear about that.
Oh my God, this is the best. Yeah. Oh my God. Cause you get so intimate with your clients, you end up loving, you know, the results and the ways that it's impacting their lives. And so many, I call it the Trojan horse effect, essentially, to start working in your sleep, because, you know, we go in under the guise of looking at our sleep, but what we often find is in order to impact our sleep, sleep is so insidious in so many areas. And so often in order to really make a quantifiable difference there, we have to clean up a lot of things that aren't working in other areas. So as it turned out, one client, so she's really great. She was going through some difficulties in her relationship. And so they had done, you know, that kind of very relatable thing where then you break up and then you get back together and you break up and you get back together. And yet she would notice a real measurable change in her HRV as it would relate to then when she would go back to that relationship that really in, you know, kind of her heart of hearts knew wasn't working, and it would be measurable. So one of the things that she took from that was that she began to really kind of fall in love with feeling great. And because once you see the difference of like how it can just feel incredible, the difference of, you know, when you're kind of doing all the things that then you begin to, even if you're not cognizant that might be impacting it, once you begin to know the things, and then you do those things and you get those sort of low readouts of HRV and you just feel like, oh, just you're making it through the day. You're just dragging versus like thriving and you're, you know, the HRV readouts are just soaring and you're feeling great and you can just take on anything. You really do want to often put in the work to maintain that. So, so for her, once she started achieving those higher levels, and then to see that hit and just to see it in black and white was really helped her be real and straight with herself that, okay, this is just not working. So I think it can be such a, I think there's so many, cool implications around, you know, metrics like this. And, also to help us with more velocity, make the tough changes, that will maybe be challenging over the short term, but in the long term, bring us major gains. You know, my boyfriend, I was sharing with you before this, he has online training courses in the area of poker. So they have a lot of strategy that kind of applies to life. And, you know, in poker, you're often looking for the kind of long game. And that's what we're doing here with sleep change and, you know, and shifting of this area, because we're really looking for not just like one or two nights, you know, of a difference. We're looking for a trend that then kind of creates a life that's uncommon, you know, in a society where sleep deprivation rates are really very high and predicted to continue to unfortunately rise unless interrupted.
Yeah. And so, you know, let's talk about technology real quick on one of the last points. And there's a lot of gadgets. I love data. I love technology. And there's a lot of just hoopla and it's very noisy in the online world when it comes
yes.
to in the health industry. So let's, what are like some gadgets that you like that would help us with our sleep? Let's say maybe two.
Yeah, totally. Great question. Okay. So, because to underscore exactly what you're saying, make it such a good point that there are just so many gadgets out there. I've shared on my website about this. I just was at CES a little while ago, which is one of the large, like the world's largest tech event. And it was crazy. The sleep tech alone, it had this whole like huge, huge thing. It was insane. So the sleep tech industry is booming and projected to increase. So coming from that place, like where do you begin? And you don't want to also just break the bank to sleep. So I guess if I were to say two real gadgets, one that I have just about every one of my clients have is the Oura Ring, spelled O-U-R-A. And the reason for that is, so what I like about that one is it's very user-friendly. And by the way, I don't have any affiliation. I just, it really works particularly well for just about every person. I have people from, you know, in their 30s wearing, 20s and 30s wearing it, and up to in their 70s. So it's, you know, the ease of use, but also I like that it plays more into this readiness conversation of some of your health metrics. So your body temperature, for women, that can be particularly insightful because we also have to consider our infradian rhythm and versus, as opposed to just our circadian rhythm. So our infradian rhythm relates to our menstrual cycles. So those go up and down for childbearing women. Ages, you know, between the age of, you know, those childbearing years. And so that's going all variable. So you can see a lot of insight from that. Also, your respiratory rate, your HRV, your heart rate, and also the fallout of your heart rate throughout the night and kind of the shape of it. We're looking to kind of optimize that too, because it has a kind of design to it. And then also, of course, sleep time duration and wake ups. Now, most of these gadgets on the market do not, unfortunately, I wish they did, do a very good job with sleep stages. So when people are like, oh, you know, I don't get much REM or deep sleep from, and that's coming from a wristwatch or a, or the ring or any of those things. Unfortunately, you can't put too much credibility into those, but because right now the closest gold standard, of course, is polysonogram, but for mass use, you know, there's different ones that are on the head that will have some sort of semblance of EEG readout. And those are the closest we can get for sleep stages at the moment for the mass audience. So one for that, if sleep stage is of concern for you, the Dream headband, DREEM, is FDA cleared. However, they are still sort of just like cumbersome. They're on your head and they kind of fall off, and, you know. So that's kind of a unique use case often. But so for the average person, it's that Oura Ring to begin, because that can really help with making the behavioral changes necessary to improve your sleep. And then I would actually honestly probably say, I don't know if this would qualify as a gadget, but the blue blockers. I mean, because, you know, I would love to see a day when pretty much all of us are wearing those, particularly after sunset, or until we all as a like society start shifting over to circadian rhythm lighting. You know, so either one of those, but until then, I would say probably the most practical application would be buy yourself a pair of blue blockers. Don't be sticker shock even if you have to begin on like Amazon for a, you know, kind of a more cheapy pair to start, like do that to begin. So those would be my two. But there's a lot more that can also aid in things like, you know, your temperature during sleep. The big one is the light optimization, which often can cost nothing. You just turn off the lights at night, you know, and use like red lights or candles or fire or what have you. But it's often the doing of that. So that's where the blue blockers can come in to help if people aren't going to do those other things.
Yeah, I have a pair of blue blockers. I think they're a game changer.
Yeah, they're a game really changer. Are. Yeah.
And so sleep is a skill. And so I'm curious, what are the top three traits you think makes a great sleeper?
Oh, like the psychological traits or like mindset traits?
Or it can be whatever. I just think like if somebody comes up to you and they're like, Molly, I really want to improve my sleep. And I know it's a skill, you know, so what are three things I can do?
Yeah, great question. So everything that we do at Sleep is a Skill is largely from the framework of circadian rhythm entrainment. And so that's a whole area of understanding that, as we've alluded to, the circadian rhythm, which I didn't really properly define it, but it's essentially, that's circa is, you know, Latin for round. And so it's basically circa around 24 hours, span of time that we are meant to have this kind of rhythm as humans. And also as humans, we're diurnal creatures. So we're meant to be largely more active during the day and at rest at night. So coming from that kind of framework, then you can partake in something called circadian rhythm entrainment. And that really just looks at all of these factors that help provide cues to the body, because it's actually trying to stay on time all the time. So not only do we have that master clock in our brains, but we also have in virtually every cell all these little mini clocks that are also trying to all stay on time. And like this big, you know, the master clock is almost that choreographer kind of keeping the time, and all these other clocks are trying to stay aligned with that. So if that's the case, then what are the cues that keep, tell those clocks what time it is? So the number one most important thing for circadian rhythm is light. So I really have people become real connoisseurs of light. So you can do things if you're more of the nerdy types like I am, then there's really cool apps that will measure the lux output in your environment. So there's all kinds of different ones. You can get like My Lux, Lux, the light meter, different ones, doesn't really matter, but all of them will show you the power of the lux that's in your environment. And once you don't have to do it for very long, but even if you just do it for like a day or 2 days or whatever, you'll start being like, what? when you're inside, the lux output in, I don't know, Starbucks, we were talking about Starbucks earlier, might be like 60. And then you go outside, and then on a, you know, at solar noon, if you're closer to, depending on where you are, like longitudinally or latitudinally, it can suddenly be up to 50,000 lux, or, you know, you can get to a crazy difference and variance of the power of that light. And so like, why do we care? We care because if you think of a day spent on the beach and with all that sunlight, and then you go home, and even if you have, you sit down, you watch a little TV or what have you, the difference, the ratio of, light output versus then, even if you are still exposed to blue light in the evening, it's so markedly different that it helps your, circadian rhythm to know, okay, well, this is clearly no longer daytime. So then it can begin to shift over, because melatonin is the hormone of darkness, is what it's known as. And so it, true to the name, requires darkness in order to really secrete at levels that we're looking to achieve. So that brings it to the second thing that you'd need to have as a trait, is then to become quite the connoisseur of darkness as well. So I make the argument that we're in a dark deprived society, where so many of us really don't get access to total darkness. There's actually only like, I think it's like a dozen or something places on the planet that are known as dark designated areas, where then, even on a political level, it's being protected from light pollution, essentially, so that you can still stargaze and stuff in those couple of areas on the planet. But largely, we have so much inundation of light that makes an impact on the quality and quantity of our sleep. Even like a couple lux and some different sleep studies have been shown to disrupt our sleep. So it's something to consider. So that would be the second one. So it's getting your light right, but then also becoming more of a dark connoisseur. And then the third thing in circadian rhythm entrainment is temperature. So from that place, then you're looking to optimize your temperature, and what are some of the things that would shift your temperature. Of course, there's environmental temperature, so you have access to your thermostat. Some people don't, if they're in an apartment building or what have you, but if you do, then you can actually ensure that you have a higher body temperature during the day and lower at night, artificially, like the zoo animals that many of us are, than setting it that way, because that would have mimicked what we would have seen outside usually. So doing that can make a difference. And then, but what else impacts our temperature is movement. So the timing of our exercise, and then also the timing of our meal times, because those can actually heat up your body. And then the other fun one to think about is how our thoughts even heat up our body. There's even a product out there that will cool down your prefrontal cortex when you are having hyper aroused brain states at night for people that are dealing with insomnia. That could be a way to kind of help aid in the ability to sleep, because when the brain's overheating, then it's challenging for us to achieve, restful sleep. So that can be a really interesting one to help us take further responsibility for even our thoughts and, kind of freaking out, trying to force ourselves to sleep, how that can have a backfiring effect. So really it's light, darkness, and temperature are three of those big traits.
And the last question is, where can listeners find more about you at?
Yes. So sleepasaskill.com really acts as, a big container of all the things. So basically a couple of the offerings we have on there is one, in case you couldn't tell, I'm a pretty obsessive personality and I'm focused in the area of sleep and health like 24/7. So I do every Monday, what I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, on what I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep right then. So send those out every single Monday. And then so you can sign up for that. And then we also are we're about to put on this downloadable PDF that will have kind of a key, like a little rubric type of deal for optimized bedroom. And so then it will show all these different things that can help make a difference in your bedroom, but even just the overall framework to apply for that. And then there's also a sleep assessment on there that you can do and then get more customized feedback as well. So those are a couple of the things that we got going on over there. And then of course the Sleep is a Skill podcast.
Yeah. So I could talk to you probably, we can do Joe Rogan style and talk about 2-3 more hours of sleep,
right?
But I want to be mindful of your time. And but yeah, people definitely check out her newsletter and her podcast and everything she has going on. I don't think I know anyone who loves as much, who loves sleep and the topic of sleep as much as she does. So definitely give her a follow.
I love that. That literally gives me a giant grin as you say that, because it's so true. And my poor boyfriend is like, can we talk about anything besides sleep, please? Like,
yeah, sleep's okay. Sleep's okay. But yeah, you love it. So
I really, really do.
Thank you again. And I will include a lot of the things that we talked about in this episode and all the ways that you can stay in touch with her. And so until next time, people, stay awesome and be limitless. Peace. If you are a high-performance entrepreneur, leader, or executive looking to supercharge your energy and become the most enhanced version of yourself without the guesswork, and you're tired of cookie-cutter templates, randomly guessing and hoping the next thing will work, and you actually want a precise and bespoke health optimization and performance roadmap that is in-depth, data-driven, and custom-tailored specifically for you, then my superhuman coaching programs are probably a good fit for you. No stones will be left untouched. Now, it's not a good fit for you if you are someone who does not want to invest the time, the commitment, nor the energy into getting the results. But if you are someone who is ready to start their N of One journey, upgrade their body and brain with precision, and truly live a limitless life, I invite you to apply by heading over to theartoffitnessinlife.com/us, and you'll get the opportunity to talk with me for 60 minutes, and we'll take a deep dive into where you currently are and where you're trying to go. And then we'll decide if this is a good fit for you and me. And if it is, I'll extend an invitation for us to work together. Once again, to apply, head over to theartoffitnessinlife.com/us. I look forward to hearing from you.